The position to which you have just elected me is a new one, and I shall take office on the 1st of January 2010. The Lisbon Treaty wanted to instill greater continuity and coherence in the work of the European Council of Heads of State and Government. Six monthly presidencies had the advantage of involving all 27 member states in the work of the Union. The disadvantage was a lack of perspective. It's my firm intention to ensure that our work develops over a long-term period. A perspective that goes beyond 6 months will allow us to be better organised where the major multi-annual dossiers are concerned, such as the financial perspectives and the Lisbon strategy. I also think that going back to our roots in the European Council could help us to discuss from time to time, in an informal and open way, the big questions of the European project. I'm thinking more specifically of the economic and social agenda, and this is a particularly urgent matter because of the environmental and energy challenges we face and the aspirations we have for greater security and justice for all our fellow citizens. We're living through exceptionally difficult times. The financial crisis and its dramatic impact on employment and budgets, the climate crisis which threatens our very survival, a period of anxiety, uncertainty and lack of confidence. Yet these problems can be overcome by a joint effort between our countries. 2009 is also the first year of global governance with the establishment of the G20 in the middle of the financial crisis. The climate conference in Copenhagen is another step towards the global management of our planet. Our mission, our presidency, is one of hope, supported by acts and by deeds.
Top officials of 34 nations in the Western Hemisphere gathered to negotiate a plan that would revolutionize the way their countries interact with each other.
We're working to build a free trade area of the Americas, and we're determined to complete those negotiations by January of 2005. Nothing will distract us. Nothing will deter us in completing this great work.
Proponents claim that the FTAA will foster economic progress, enhance domestic prosperity, and raise living standards throughout the region. But the real goals driving the plan are not so publicly promoted. To appreciate the real goals driving the FTAA, it helps to understand a movement well underway that targets the independence of nations. Strobe Talbott, editor for Time magazine and later Deputy Secretary of State under Bill Clinton, enthusiastically predicts, "Nationhood as we know it will be obsolete. All states will recognize a single global authority." Henry Grunwald, former editor-in-chief at Time magazine and later Ronald Reagan's ambassador to Austria, declares that the nation-state will undergo sharp limitations of its sovereignty. And just as the old petty principalities had to dissolve into the wider nation-state, the nation-state will have to dissolve into wider structures. The January 2000 cover of the New Republic proclaims, America is surrendering its sovereignty to a world government. Hooray! Headlines in the article by senior editor Robert Wright announce, World government is coming. Deal with it. Wright reports, much power now vested in the nation state is indeed starting to migrate to international institutions. World government, he claims, is probably in the cards. And what's more, it's a good idea. These opinion molders imply that natural forces are responsible for the demise of independent nations. Yet most promoting this notion belong to globalist organizations that are quietly working to restructure the world. The present drive for world government reflects the age-old lust for supreme power over mankind. Its architects view self-governing nations with individual constitutions and laws and backed by national militaries as obstacles to establishing a world authority. The architects also recognize that nations are reluctant to surrender their independence to a world body. But they discovered that a group of nations could be persuaded to give up substantial authority gradually to a regional alliance. Former National Security Advisor Zbigniew Brzezinski explains this strategy to his fellow globalists. We cannot leap into world government in one quick step. The precondition for eventual globalization, genuine globalization, is progressive regionalization, because thereby we move toward larger, more stable, more cooperative units. Populations of the proposed regional alliances, or blocs, rarely give much concern to these new institutions because their initial authority seems small. But over time, this authority expands. Planners structure these institutions so that they will merge seamlessly under a world government. The model for progressive regionalization can be found in the development of the European Union, or the EU. The movement for a united Europe achieved its first victory with the formation of the European Coal and Steel Community in 1951. This treaty merged the coal and steel industries of six nations under a single regional authority. In 1957, the nations agreed to expand this institution into the common market. At the time, citizens of these independent nations were told that the purpose was merely to eliminate mutual trade barriers so that a huge prosperity zone would develop. But the common market proponents weren't upfront with the plan's ultimate purpose. Belgian Prime Minister Paul-Henri Spaak suggested to his fellow EU architects that the most effective way to disguise their project's political purpose is to conceal it behind a pretense that it is concerned only with economic cooperation based on dismantling trade barriers, a common market. In the following decades, this strategy is identified for what it really was. Bernard Connolly, a former senior official in the European Commission, laments, "It has now become clear to us that what we thought was a common market is nothing more than a project to create a European federal superstate in which our sovereignty, Britain's national identity, would be extinguished." But it wasn't only Britain's sovereignty that was compromised. By 1993, 15 nations were persuaded to take the next step and form the European Union. By 2005, a total of 25 nations had submitted to EU control. These once independent countries are now being asked to ratify an EU constitution that would formalize their subservience. The EU model has been so successful in absorbing the authority of independent nations that internationalists are replicating the formula around the world. A January 2004 newswire from the Associated Press in Islamabad reports, "The nations of South Asia agreed Friday on the framework for a free trade zone that would encompass one-fifth of the world's population. The trade agreement would allow the harmonization of tariffs and the establishment of a regional development bank." Only months later, an AP newswire from Laos declares that Southeast Asian nations and China signed an accord to create the world's biggest free trade area, a critical step in their vision of a trade bloc to rival Europe and North America. Here in the Western Hemisphere, the architects of world government are also attempting to replicate what's happening in Europe. Following the EU model, they are working to corral the nations on this side of the globe under one regional authority. Although the process is well underway, many Americans have little idea of what's actually unfolding. The first milestone in the process was the formation of the North American Free Trade Agreement. The plan was negotiated during the George Bush Senior Administration, but President Bill Clinton, with the help of key Republicans, successfully pushed NAFTA through Congress in 1993. Although many politicians had a vague idea of how the agreement would actually affect trade between the U.S., Mexico, and Canada, only a few recognize NAFTA for what it really is. NAFTA is not a conventional trade agreement, but the architecture of a new international system, championed former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger. Author William Orme Jr. wrote approvingly in a Washington Post op-ed, "NAFTA lays the foundation for a continental common market, as many of its architects privately acknowledge. The agreement creates a variety of continental institutions that are, in aggregate, an embryonic NAFTA government." Only a year after the formation of NAFTA, President Clinton succeeded in pulling the U.S. into the World Trade Organization. The WTO would establish global policies that NAFTA was expected to implement. Immediately thereafter, Clinton hosted the 1994 Summit of the Americas in Miami. Here, the proposal for the creation of a free trade area of the Americas was formally announced. With the initial exception of Cuba, the FTAA would expand NAFTA to include all nations in the Western Hemisphere. For years, the FTAA architects developed their plan below the surface of public attention. However, a few planners and supporters would reveal their true intentions. Speaking privately to a group in Madrid, Mexican President Vicente Fox declared, "Eventually, our long-range objective is to establish, with the United States, but also with Canada, our other regional partner, an ensemble of connections and institutions similar to those created by the European Union." Fox's statements drew the attention of the Wall Street Journal. The journal openly endorsed Fox's vision. Reformist Mexican President Vicente Fox raises eyebrows with his suggestion that over a decade or two, NAFTA should evolve into something like the European Union, with open borders for not only goods and investment, but also people. He can rest assured that there is one voice north of the Rio Grande that supports his vision, to wit, this newspaper. But Vicente Fox and the journal represent only the tip of the establishment iceberg. Without being as candid regarding their aims, many prominent leaders are working to implement the EU model in this hemisphere. Soon after assuming the presidency in 2000, George W. Bush Jr., following in Clinton's footsteps, would commit his administration to completing the negotiations for the FTAA.
My administration will work closely with Congress toward this goal and to take another step toward completing the free trade area of the Americas.
Publicly, the FTAA is promoted as a plan merely to expand trade between 34 nations. But as with NAFTA and the EU, trade issues are merely the pretext for a disguised attack on the independence of nations. In Foreign Affairs, future U.S. Ambassador Richard N. Gardner provides a candid description of how this disguised attack will be accomplished. The House of World Order will have to be built from the bottom up rather than the top down. It will look like a great booming, buzzing confusion. But an end run around national sovereignty, eroding it piece by piece, will accomplish much more than the old-fashioned frontal assault. Enter the booming, buzzing confusion. The FTAA is designed to fit into a constellation of organizations whose relationships and interlocking authorities puzzle casual observers. A 1995 report of the UN-aligned Commission on Global Governance describes the World Trade Organization as a crucial building block for global economic governance. The report reveals the WTO and advanced regional groups such as the EU, and as the FTAA is intended to become, will increasingly be faced with the issue that will dominate the international agenda in years to come: how to create rules for deep integration that go way beyond what has traditionally been thought of as trade. The third draft of the FTAA agreement states that signatory nations must comply with the rules and disciplines of the World Trade Organization. The FTAA is also connected to the House of World Order through the United Nations. For several years before a final FTAA agreement was even completed, the UN was already supplying funding and technical assistance for the FTAA's administrative secretariat, currently in Puebla, Mexico. As if those launching the FTAA process were following Gardner's advice word for word, the House of World Order is indeed being built by eroding national independence, piece by piece.
Few Americans know what the FTAA is, and fewer still know the danger of what implementing the FTAA will mean. The insiders have chosen the term free trade well, because it belies the true meaning of what is really going on. Karl Marx said in 1848 that free trade was a means of destroying nationhood. Without a doubt, the FTAA will mean that the United States will merge with communist and corrupt governments south of the border, and the country north of the border is socialist. We will lose the protection of our Constitution and become only one vote within a huge power grab. Our borders will cease to exist, and we will become overwhelmed by mass migration from the south. If we adopt the FTAA, we will not lose our freedoms in a day, but month by month, until we wake up one day, just as did Gulliver with the Lilliputians covered with ropes. Hitler did not impose absolute control over the German people overnight, but once he had power, he imposed rules and regulations, ropes if you will, and within a few short years, he pulled those ropes taut over the German people and then Europe. The insiders exert enormous pressure on Congress to support their plans. Regrettably, the leadership of both major political parties yield to this pressure. The only way to protect American independence is for enough Americans to generate informed pressure on Congress. Congressmen love to be reelected. Once they know they have an informed electorate on their hands, they will listen. This informed electorate will come about by enlisting more people into the fight, one at a time. If each of us rolls up our sleeves and starts to talk to our friends and acquaintances with the intent of involving them, we will ultimately not just stop the FTAA, but roll back the entire scheme to destroy our constitutional republic. What is needed is an organized force to defend the principles that formulated the Constitution and has made our country great. This should be the mission of every red-blooded American. And it is the mission of the John Birch Society. If you are ready to roll up your sleeves and help save America, contact us now or talk to the people who are showing you this video. Now is the time to act.